Welcome back to the second hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. And once you download that app, you search for WILK News Radio and you favorite us, and that's it. You got us. You don't have to search anymore. We'll be right there, sent to your inbox. You can also catch us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. Multiple podcasts are made from each show. Usually it's anywhere between 3 and 5 different podcasts. Some of the special features will be on a podcast individually. And then usually each hour of the show is broken down into segments. So make sure you favorite us our podcast as well so you get it downloaded. A little personal note. Last week we had Julie Grant, a host on Court TV from Opening Statements. That's her morning show there, weekday mornings, 8 o'clock. Well, I will be on Opening Statements on Court TV tomorrow with Julie Grant on her show, and that'll be audio and video, so I'll be on camera again. So that'll be tomorrow morning. I think my segment's on about 8:15. So if you're watching Court TV tomorrow morning, 8:15, I will be on a host. I believe we're talking about the Walmart stabbing situation that happened over this weekend. That was just a crazy turn of events, and thankfully there were good Samaritans there to stop it. Not that, almost a dozen people were injured. And speaking to some of the witnesses, it was the people who couldn't get out of this madman's way. But thankfully, a good Samaritan, a Marine who was armed with a handgun, took action and at least stopped him from doing any further damage. That person is, I believe, making a court appearance. I believe I heard the news break say after being arrested. So that's a good thing. So I'll be on Court TV tomorrow morning with Julie Grant, so you can get that wherever you find Court TV on your cable station or your streaming devices or whatever that is there. Well, there's a great Northeast exodus, they're calling it. How high taxes are driving away billions of people and billions of dollars. And Pennsylvania is included in this, and we're going to talk. We're not the highest, we're not the mainstay, but we are taking a hit here in Pennsylvania. New York and New Jersey, of course, lost the bulk of the amount here. They lost $140 billion in income in just one decade. Call it moving van economics. And New York and New Jersey are the biggest losers. But Pennsylvania is in here, so we'll get to that in the story. A new analysis from Unleash Prosperity on the latest census and income tax data finds these two states have lost more residents over the past decade than any other state not named California. So California still leads the nation, but New York and New Jersey are not far behind. And you got to think, what do they all have in common? Yeah. From 2015 to 2024, New York has lost 2 million residents. These are giant population losses for two of America's leading industrial and financial centers throughout the 20th century. You have to realize, after 9/11, a lot of the financial institutions moved to New Jersey, and now they're leaving New Jersey as well. These New York and New Jersey refugees have mostly relocated to the new powerhouse states like Florida, Texas, Tennessee. These moving vans explains why the Southeast is now, for the first time ever, the economically dominant region in the country. Even more problematic for New York and New Jersey is that the movers are taking a lot of personal income and purchasing power with them. From 2012 to 2022, New York has lost $111 billion in income, while New Jersey has lost more than $31 billion. Because the income is lost forever, except for the rare cases where someone exiles and moves back, these losses accumulate year after year. Now, here's where it stands. New York, like we said, $111 billion. California, $102.4 billion. So I stand corrected. California is only after New York after this new data is out. Illinois, $63.3 billion. Again, this is over a 10-year period. New Jersey, $31 billion. Massachusetts, $19.5 billion. Maryland, $17.4 billion. Pennsylvania comes in seventh at $16.5 billion that has left the Commonwealth for other states. Ohio, right after that, 15.3. Virginia, 14.1. And Connecticut, 12.6. Now, outside of Virginia, which does have a Republican governor, but it has the Congress controlled by the Democrats, one house anyway, all the other states, New York, California, Illinois, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Connecticut. But Pennsylvania, seventh on that list at $16.5 billion. So why are so many people leaving the Northeast? Well, a myriad of reasons. Crime, cost of living, better job opportunities, warmer weather, and yes, to save money on taxes. New York, New Jersey, and California are the three biggest losers in the interstate migration sweepstakes. And they just happen to be the states with the highest state local taxes add-ons. The big winner, states like Florida and Texas, have no income tax at all. So states which lost the most people domestically from 2015 to 2024, California, number one, 2.3 million people. New York, just over 2 million. Illinois, just over 1 million. New Jersey, 522,000. Massachusetts, 300,000. Maryland, 268,000. Louisiana, 249,000. Then Pennsylvania again, 238,898 people. That's how many people left the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Doesn't sound like a whole lot, but that tax base is a pretty big tax base. And this is people with the ability to move elsewhere, which means they're bringing income, they're bringing network with them out of the state, out of the Commonwealth. And that's what they're talking about in this story. There's a warning sign that should be flashing. The place in America with the highest income tax is New York City. Now one of the leading candidates for mayor, Zohran Mamdani, wants to raise the tax on the rich by another 2 percentage points. Once you've taxed the rich, and listen, this tax the rich thing, and once you get past the debacle that it truly is, because the top 1%, the top 10%, the top 5%, and every demographic pays the majority of the taxes. So they are paying their fair share and then some. But yes, it's easy to say, well, they have all the extra money. We can just squeeze a little more out of them. Yes, okay. Theoretically, you can, but it hasn't worked anywhere in history. In France, they tried to institute, and you could do your own research on this. They tried to institute what was called a yacht tax because a lot of people in France had yachts. And they introduced this yacht tax because they figure, well, if you're wealthy enough to have a splurge and disposable income to buy a yacht, then we could tax you higher. And they said, yeah, you could do that. You could pass that law. And once you get enough people in place, they pass that law. And what happened is all the people with those yachts just registered their yachts in Italy or other states, Spain. And now France got nothing. Because if you're targeting the people with the biggest resources to do something about it, you're only going to hurt yourself in the long run. Simply here, you know, you want to tax the wealthiest people in, let's say, New York. Well, the people in New York are just going to sell and leave and go elsewhere because they can. And they're probably not tied down to a 9-to-5 job like you or I. They're probably not tied down to routes that can't be moved because they have the ability to say, hey, we're going to move from New York. We're going to move somewhere, Texas. We're going to move to Florida. We're going to move somewhere else. And take their family with them. Take their wealth. Take their businesses. We can just up and relocate. There's very little business that can't be done anywhere this day and age. So, yes, it's easy to say we're going to target these entities. We're going to These people have so much excessive income that they won't even know it. Well, they know it, believe me. They didn't become rich. They didn't become wealthy because they're not frugal, because they don't have an awareness of their worth and what they can do and where they can do it. So they'll just up and move. And that's exactly what's happening. That's what these statistics show. It's no anomaly that the highest tax states are losing the most amount of people, taking the most amount of money with them. And what happens, though, and no one ever tries to answer this question, or no real media asks this to someone like a Mamdani who wants to run New York like a socialist utopia. What happens when there's no one left to tax? What happens when they all leave? What happens when you only have middle, lower, and poor? Because no one else wants to be subject to your nonsense that has failed throughout history and been successful nowhere throughout history. They make promises that they know they can't keep. They come up with programs that sound good to the uneducated or people who just think that, hey, we're going to make out on this deal because it's other people who are going to pay for it. Well, sooner or later, the other people up and leave. You know, if there was a bar or a restaurant where you're only going to charge the people who make over $100,000, and they're going to pay for the people who make under $100,000 because you're only charging them, and they have extra money, so they can pay for it. Well, how long do you think before people who make over $100,000 decide, hey, I'm just going to have drinks on my deck? I'm not going to go to this place anymore. It costs too much. And all I'm doing is supporting everybody else. People are voting with their feet, with moving vans, as per this survey. And until people really grasp, and Pennsylvania's right in the middle of this, on both the amount of people who've left and the amount of money in the billions that have left. People taking... What was Pennsylvania? $16.5 billion? And yes, that's over 10 years. But do you know what the tax base on $16.5 billion is? That could have went to schools, that could have went to roads, that could have went to things in Pennsylvania. But because they overburden, because they mismanage, because they pave our roads dozens of times because they can't figure out how to do it right or oversee it right, people are choosing with their feet or their moving vans. You know, I talk about it here all the time. I wanted and still want to spend the rest of my life here in Northeast Pennsylvania. But if Lackawanna County doesn't get its act together and wants to tax and reassess and everything else to the point where it becomes too much of a burden, and not that we can't afford it, but too much of a burden, then yeah, why wouldn't I sell my house for what they say it's worth and I can pay for a year's rent anywhere in the country I wanted to off the interest of my house sale? Because I'm not going to stay here to lose money. It's as simple as that. And there are a lot of other people in that boat that can do that and will do that and are doing that based on these numbers to the tune of 233,898 that have left this state. We're not gaining people. We're losing people. Those are people whose kids aren't going to colleges here. Those are people who aren't buying groceries here. Those are people that aren't going to restaurants here, aren't paying for gas here, aren't registering their vehicles here. See the trickle-up effect here? When you run a reasonable, well-managed, fiscally conservative state, people want to be here. And everyone wins when they are here. Chase them away. Little by little, that bucket dries up. It's 4:23 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. We're back. WILK News Radio here. Joe from Chips Park chimed in on the text message line. California, New York, New Jersey elected leadership has made it impossible for the working class people to live there, yet the same parties continue to dominate the elections. The part where these residents lose me is when they vote for the same way in their new homes. When will they figure it out? I hear you. Rob, my wife and I are moving to South Carolina. Taxes are the main reason. Good luck down there. Tell me, where in South Carolina are you moving to? I know a bunch of people down there. Good afternoon, Rob. I left Pennsylvania nearly 5 years ago, came back for the summer to see some of my old customers and do a few things for them. But every time I come back here, I think, why would I want to come back to live permanently? Gases are insane. Roads are horrible. Opportunities not as abundant. And, of course, winter. I hear you. Listen, I was down in Virginia, and gas was $2.89 a gallon. So got some going and got some coming back. But almost out now already, long trip home. Somebody said that their group of friends they grew up with, the majority of them are already left. So, yeah, I'm 51. Two-thirds of my friend group moved to Florida since COVID. You're not the first. School property taxes are crazy. Rob, my wife and I are close to moving ourselves. We have a nice house in the mountaintop. But kids just moved out, and combined school and property taxes are $700 plus a month. Something has to give. I hear you. And listen, people are of deciding that. And it's really not, like I said, I 22 years ago when I moved here, I want to stay here. I wanted to live here. This just was not a stepping stone for me. But you know, if you're going to continue to raise taxes, if prices, especially this day and age. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home and law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice on this day, July 28th, throughout history. We're going to start with police officer Richard V. Lawn Jr., Lower Gwynedd Township Police Department in Pennsylvania. In 2003, on this day, he succumbed to injuries sustained 4 days earlier when he was involved in an automobile accident on McKean Road. We have police officer Jorgen Holland, Upper Chichester Township Police Department in Pennsylvania, on this day in 1998. He succumbed to injuries sustained 9 months earlier when he was struck in the face while responding to a domestic disturbance call. He was able to return to work the following month. However, his health continued to deteriorate, and he died as a result of complications. Police officer Richard Remen, Philadelphia Police Department, in 1966, on this day. He died from injuries sustained 18 days earlier when he fell from his police car and struck his head. He served with the agency for 6 years. And we have patrolman Edward Vincent Tierney Jr., Pittsburgh Bureau of Police, in 1953, suffered fatal injuries while his motorcycle skidded on the 1400 block of West Liberty Avenue. He was thrown from the motorcycle and struck his head on a utility pole. And policeman Alfonso Bonvicola, Philadelphia Police Department, in 1934, was struck and killed by a car on 22nd Street and Snyder Avenue as he stepped off a trolley while returning from an assignment. And the last one for today is police officer Thomas McVeigh, Philadelphia Police Department, Pennsylvania, 1918, was shot and killed during a racial disturbance in South Philadelphia. Officer McVeigh was shot on Titan Street near 27th Street when he tried to get into a house from which shots had been fired. McVeigh had been on the force less than a year. Suspect who shot and killed another man was arrested and charged with 2 counts of murder. He was survived by his fiancée. And those are the heroes on this day throughout history in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that we lost. It is 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History on this day, Monday, July 28th, 2025. So let's see what we have on July 28th. Here's an overview of notable events that happened on this day. 1932, the Bonus Army dispersed by U.S. troops. One of the most infamous moments of the Great Depression, U.S. Army troops under the command of General Douglas MacArthur used force to evict thousands of World War I veterans, known as the Bonus Army, from their encampment in Washington, D.C. These veterans have been demanding early payment of bonuses promised to them. The clash resulted in injuries, public outrage, and became a key factor in President Herbert Hoover's declining popularity. Again, this was 1932. They used U.S. troops to boot out World War I veterans, known as the Bonus Army, from their encampment in Washington, D.C., because they were demanding the bonuses that they were promised. 1868, the 14th Amendment was certified. The 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was officially adopted, granting citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the U.S., including formerly enslaved individuals. It also guaranteed equal protection under the law, becoming one of the most significant legal foundations of the American Civil Rights Movement. In 1868, we promised at our founding to become a more perfect union. Never said we get it right off the start. Most people aren't perfect. Matter of fact, no one is, right? Some cultural milestones. 1866, the birth of Beatrix Potter. While British, Beatrix Potter, the tale of Peter Rabbit, became a staple in American children's literature. 1945, U.S. Army bomber crashed into the Empire State Building. A B-25 bomber crashed into the 79th floor of the Empire State Building in New York City, killing 14 people. The crash was due to dense fog and remains one of the most notable accidents involving a skyscraper. Oh, you add 9/11, it kind of changes things. I was actually working in the city when the blimp hit a building. So, stranger things happened. Some 2005, John G. Roberts nominated as the Chief Justice. President George W. Bush nominated John Roberts to the U.S. Supreme Court following the death of Chief Justice William Rehnquist. Though Roberts was later confirmed after Rehnquist's death in September. On this day, we remember Bill Bradley, U.S. Senator and Hall of Fame basketball player, born on July 28, 1943. And Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, former First Lady, was born on this day in 1929. And that's little bit of today in history. Jake, I saw that you had some wins, some losses. The missus was celebrating a little Bubba action. Your driver came in fifth. And some other incidents. I saw your new quarterback of the Steelers threw his first interception as his first pass of the first practice of the first day.
And I am not surprised one bit.
So let's start with NASCAR. I mean, you had a decent weekend there, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say pretty decent weekend. Saturday, the best, I was going to say, Junior Motorsports, their 100th win in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. And the interesting thing about Junior Motorsports getting this 100th win is 20 years ago, it was 20 years ago when Dale Earnhardt Incorporated got their 100th win. And it wasn't at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but it was at Indianapolis Raceway Park. So pretty surreal moment to think about that, you know, pretty surreal moment to think that the company that his father started, the company that was supposed to be handed down to Dale Jr. and his sister Kelly, that 20 years ago they got their 100th win Indianapolis weekend, and here Dale Jr. and Kelly got their 100th win Indianapolis weekend with Connor Zilich, an incredible talent, amazing talent. Three wins in a row, for that matter, with Connor, whether it was Sonoma, Dover, Indianapolis, three completely different racetracks. Kids got quite a bit of talent, and it's going to be great to see him move up to the Cup Series, probably in 2026, for that matter. Indianapolis, I mean, it's such a special place. You know, it's very, very hallowed racetrack. And I think what came to mind yesterday is, you know, Bubba Wallace has had a lot of pressure on him throughout his career, going to drive for Denny Hamlin, for Michael Jordan, of all people. And I think what happened yesterday was a culmination of how far he has come as a person ever since he married his wife Amanda 3 years ago, ever since they had their son Bex last September. Bex will be a year old September 29th. And just seeing that genuine, raw emotion that Bubba Wallace had. I mean, this isn't just any other race. Like, this isn't, you know, Martinsville or Sonoma, or this is Indianapolis we're talking about. I mean, to win at Indianapolis, to hold off Kyle Larson, to overcome, there was a rain delay with four laps to go. I mean, rain was a factor all weekend at Indianapolis, it seemed like. Two overtime race starts, low on fuel. I mean, all those obstacles that Bubba had overcome yesterday for undoubtedly the biggest win of his career. I mean, it's very, very special. And
has there been a race this summer where rain hasn't been a factor?
You know, that's the interesting thing. I'm thinking, well, Pocono was delayed 2 hours because of rain. Atlanta, the Xfinity race, it didn't have a rain delay, but it had a lightning delay, which was about two and a half hours. Chicago, it seemed like every year they did the Chicago street race that there was, yeah, Sonoma, go figure. Sonoma was the only race weekend recently that didn't have any threat of rain whatsoever. Like I talked about when Connor Zilich won at Dover last weekend, that was rain shortened. And then, yeah, Indianapolis this whole weekend, it seemed like rain was an issue all 3 days. Trucks, Xfinity, and then Cup. So,
I mean, there's really nowhere in order to get the race around the nation so people can see it and partake in it. You know, it's kind of the thing there. But you would think, you know, what could they do to make that less of an issue? Because it really defeats a lot of what they're trying to do.
I was nervous as all hell Saturday during the Xfinity race because it was a 4:30 start and there was talk that there was going to be rain later in the day in Indianapolis. As a matter of fact, I mean, Friday was a washout with Brickyard 400 practice. They had to squeeze it in Saturday afternoon before qualifying. And then just like what would happen the next day, there was a pop-up shower with less than 10 laps to go. And you're thinking, like, are they going to get this going or are they not? And the funny thing with Dale Earnhardt Jr. getting that 100th win in the Xfinity Series, he will not be able to go to Iowa Speedway this weekend. TNT has finished up their portion of the broadcast season. He has some commitments going on. And he said, when it was looking like certain points in the race that a junior motorsports car was going to win, he said that he was actually kind of hoping his guys wouldn't win at Iowa this coming weekend because obviously you don't want to miss out on a milestone moment like that. And yeah, pretty awesome weekend at Indianapolis. I mean, again, to win the Brickyard 400, I mean, when you're referred to as a winner at Daytona, the Daytona 500, the Coca-Cola 600, Brickyard 400, Southern 500, you're not really referred to as a winner of those races. You're referred to as a champion of that race. And incredibly happy for Bubba Wallace, incredibly happy for his family and for Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan. I know they've been taking NASCAR to court over the past year or so. That's been an ongoing battle back and forth. So it's just great to see it all finally come together for Bubba. It seems like he's spent the last couple of years always on the bubble of either making the playoffs or missing the playoffs. And now with just a couple of races left in the regular season, he doesn't have to worry about that anymore.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. There's today in history for NASCAR from this weekend.
Kelly was very, very happy yesterday seeing Bubba win that race. I mean, amidst everything that we've had going on right now. And, you know, I'd like to think that it was, in our case, it was definitely a sign from up above. So
there it was indeed.
Happy for Bubba. Happy Brad got a top five amidst all the craziness.
A little something to put a smile on the weekend.
Yeah.
It's 4:55 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. We just got a minute and a half before the top of the hour here. Did you see Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez quietly got found in violation of ethics violations for her acceptance of the tickets and dress? Remember that big white dress with the big red lettering, "Tax the Rich"? Well, it was against rules, and they ended up stiffing some of the vendors with that, too, so even not even up front. But the ethics committee found that she did, in fact, violate rules by accepting the tickets for both her and her boyfriend at the time, now her fiancé, and that dress and some other things like her hair and makeup and all that sort of thing. So she's got to pay a fine, but other than that, there'll be no further follow-up on the issue. Also, she's being ripped as her New York City district is overrun. They call it a seedy market of sweethearts. Now, I was born and raised in New York 14, the district in which she represents. Roosevelt Avenue, which they're talking about, back in my youth, used to be a very shady, not so nice area of town. And it got cleaned up pretty nice. And retailers started to flourish. And business was booming. And restaurants and bars started opening up. And it really became a tourist attraction because it was a big mix of international flavor. Well, now they call it a market of sweethearts. It's basically an open-air brothel. It's prostitutes run wild. And it's really taken over the area with drugs running rampant again. And it's truly devastating. It's what happened there. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK. We'll be back.